I'm Tom Downing.
I'm Adam DiCarlo.
And welcome to Before the Break, a podcast for actors
by actors.
Brought to you by Working Actor Pro.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Before the Break. I am joined by special guest host and past guest Julian Gavilanis. This week, we continue our industry series with talent agent Brett Rigby. He's an agent at the New York City boutique agency CGF Talent. Their roster of clients can be seen in TV, film, Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional projects. He's a member of the National Association of Teachers of Singing, the Voice Foundation, and the New York Singing Teachers. He's also served as adjunct voice faculty at NYU. Please welcome to the show, talent agent Brett Rigby. Brett, thank you so much for joining us. So before we get into, you know, how about you became an agent and all that good stuff, why don't we talk about the elephant in the room? We are obviously going through the WGA strike and the SAG after strike. On your end as an agent, I'm so curious, are you just in the last like several months, several weeks, several days, just being inundated with like messages from your clients freaking out? Or is everyone like, yeah, it's just going to be a probably big break, but we'll come back? Like, what's the temperature with your clients?
I mean, it's a little bit of both. So we do have people. I mean, this is the thing, is you have an industry that during the pandemic was the only thing that was kind of functioning even remotely correctly, all of a sudden being to a full stop. And so when you have that as a full stop, there is a, I think a lot of people have PTSD and they're like, oh no, work is going away again.
It feels like coronavirus 2.0. Yes.
And I mean, I would say we have a combination of actors calling to say, you know what, I said no to this opportunity to potentially be in a play or to potentially work in this. I actually think I'm open to that. We've had some of that. And then we've also had people being like, is my series going to get picked up for, you know, a season, whatever, or what,
yeah,
you know, what do we do considering that, you know, I built my life in such and such a city and I don't know if I'm going back to that place. I mean, there's a combination of that happening too. As far as the elephant in the room and what you can say is that this is really unfortunate. The fact that we are all sitting here and everyone is going through this. And I think that it's because we have an industry that is not, I think Fran said it best. I don't know if everybody, that was one of the best, most impassioned speeches I have heard, which is where we have actors who are working on a contract that is completely obsolete to the work they're doing. And you can't do that. You can't have someone coming at agreeing contractually to do one thing, and then when you are in the space on the shoot day doing something completely different and not being compensated accordingly. Like, I don't think what the WGA is asking for is inappropriate. I think they are grossly underpaid. And then I don't think what the actors in the union are acting is even remotely inappropriate, that you need to protect yourself. And it's frustrating to find ourselves in this situation where greed is involved, and it's a moment which is where it is black and white to me. It is black and white where those who have a lot are not willing to share with those who don't have as much. And that is at the end of the day, I am hopeful that this, I believe that this strike will result in it being, in there being more quality. I do believe that will happen. I do also think it will be an uncomfortable situation before it does.
Yeah.
And it benefits your business as well. Obviously you benefit from every single one of your clients, obviously, so you are advocating for them. You're advocating prior to the strike for them to be getting paid more as it is. You reckon that this will filter out some of the younger actors or even actors that have been in the game for a long time to just be like, I can't do this anymore, I'm out? And are you going to lose clients, do you think, or what's going to happen?
I hope not, but yeah. I think that, I mean, at the end of the day, if someone, the industry is, it's a volatile industry to begin with. It is. And at the end of the day, if the volatility, a human has the ability to come in and say, this isn't for me right now. I need the ability to step away and focus on my health and focus on my family and focus on my mental health. And I think that we are very, our office in particular is very, very empathetic and very supportive to those who want to do that. If people want the ability to step away, and some have said, you know what, I'm going to take the rest of the summer. I'm going to be gone for 3 months. I will reach out to you in this period of time. I need to do a lot of things for me. You've had other people who have been putting off because they've been working consistently, haven't necessarily seen their families in years for more than a brief period of time, and are traveling right home to like be able to see those. So there are elements of it which are good, but I ultimately think, I mean, you're right, Julian. We sit there and we do advocate for them. And what is hard is when we don't even have a conversation partner now.
Right. Right.
No one is willing to come to the table. And I feel like that has to change first before we have the ability to even do what we were doing before, which is trying to get them the best deal possibly based on what it is that they've accomplished and what they deserve.
Yeah. It's so crazy. Like, is the writer's strike kind of like got us used to this reality? Sure. Because I don't know about you, Julian, but once that all started to kind of happen, I mean, so many people I know, myself included, like the auditions just went down to like nothing. And it was like, okay, well, there's a writer's strike, obviously. And now, you know, it's the 1-2 punch. It's like, yeah, nothing's happening for quite some time now.
Yeah. Well, and you would find your way, like you would go, we would get the breakdowns. And it, for a while, we're like, how are they able to shoot this show? You get a breakdown for a new episodic and you're like, we would find out it's because the script is done. And then you would go to set and it would be, you will say exactly what is on the page.
Mm,
like that's what it's going to. And like we had several people do that because they were trying to get through as much as they possibly could in order to have enough in the can should something happen where the actors would ultimately stop. I do think that the last several weeks, the writing was on the wall. One thing that I will share that I was very upset about is when the extension from what I believe was the 4th of July or the 3rd of July, that weekend, they gave them until July 12th. I fully believe that that was the studio's way of allowing Emmy nominations to come out. And I hate that.
Yep.
I have nothing to back that up. I've read that. And I think that that is, I think that's really accurate. I think that that would be exactly why someone would do something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Cause with our strike right now, like you're not allowed to promote anything. So it's like all these, you know, acting nominations are going to go out and everyone who's nominated would not be able to talk about it. So yeah.
We have clients who have a series, have shot an entire series and they can't talk about it or put it on their social, or like they were set to go to comic cons and set to go and do all of these press pushes, all of which have been canceled. And it's just sad because these actors don't then get the ability to celebrate the work that they had done, and they deserve that.
Especially when it's not your, for people who like, this truly is their first rodeo. And they're like, this is my, you know, time where this has never happened to me.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many, I mean, there's still summer blockbusters to come out. And for those people who are in it, it's like, you can't talk about it. And
truly,
it's unfortunate.
It must be so, so sad for the small group of people who are like coming up in this time, like really strongly, like getting their first series regular, getting their first, like, you know, featured player role in a film that's big or something like that, and then this happens, and it's just like it already feels so defeating, and like, you know, you already feel like it's all so personal that it would just be like, really, like, come on, man.
I wish that I could go back. Like, it, when I made the decision to step away as an actor and I kind of joined the industry and have kind of learned from that. There's not a school you go to be on this side of things. You kind of, it's almost like a trade, which is where you watch it long enough and you start to figure out the way that you would do it. But I wish that I could go back to me, to that version of myself, and not take it as personally. you go into these rooms and like, I mean, your instrument is inside of you, right? And so you have the ability, if you are saying words or you are singing or you are dancing, your expression is coming from your body, your physical being. How could you not take that personally when it is literally the person that is kind of presenting that? But being on the other side of it and sitting in these rooms when someone leaves or decisions are made or watching the process, it couldn't be less personal. It almost like is a relief to these people of being like, oh no, you were great. You just weren't what they wanted because they weren't necessarily as clear sharing with it. But that person, and then three people later, that person were exactly what they wanted in their mind. And so those are the people that are going to final callbacks. And I just, it's almost like knowing that it is not personal at all, even a little, is something that I want an actor to be able to empower themselves with, right? I want them to have the ability to be like, okay, then I'm just going to go in and be me because no one is better at being you than you. Go in and be you. Say those words. Sing that song. Do that movement the way that you would do it.
And we say this all the time on the show. If they keep calling you back, you're doing something right.
100%.
And that's all. Like that's. Yes. Yeah. Exactly. And that all it takes is that moment of realization and that mindset that kind of sets you free, and you're like, no. I did my job. I'm throwing the sides away. I hope I did a good enough job that they call me in for the next episode or the next, you know what I mean? And if they do, you know that they're a fan of yours. They like you. You're doing something right. Yeah, exactly.
Brett, how much of your like job is just specifically like satiating an actor's ego? Like just trying to make them feel like they're like, okay when they feel so crazy and like out of sorts with themselves.
So satiating, first of all, two cool usage points for being able to incorporate that into a sentence. Right? I will say the way that our office works is that we are really, we maintain a small roster and we do that intentionally. We do that because we want everyone that we work with, we want to literally have these actors haunt our dreams and think about them constantly and know what it is they fit and be able to essentially, when we are pushing and when we're talking to casting and dealing with things, pull them up by memory and be able to spout what their strengths are, where they fit and why they're perfect for a job. So with that, there are high moments which are incredible. But then there are low moments, and those low moments are sometimes when an actor needs to be reminded, you are doing incredibly well. And I know that you can't see it because you're too close to it and you can't really see the forest through the trees, so to speak. But what you are doing is making fans, and there is a momentum around you that I don't think actors can always see. So a lot of the satiating that we'll do, a lot of the conversations that will happen will be reminding them, what we are doing is exactly on track, and we couldn't be happier with your work, and we couldn't be happier with the traction that we're getting. It is only a matter of time. A lot of what we deal with is that. Like that is something that our office focuses really heavy on, which is why we're very managerial in our approach. We want people to know, if you need to call us, call us. If you need to email us, email us. You will get a response. That is the way that we function. That is the way that I function.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I love that. I used to have friends who like would have to schedule an appointment 2 weeks out to like have a 5-minute conversation with their manager, and I'm like, you should get new reps. That's not normal. That's crazy.
I mean, I feel like we all strive to be. I being a former actor, and I can say that most of the people who are in the industry at some time dabbled in it. Not everyone. It's not an absolute, but I strive to be the agent that I never had. I had lovely agents.
That's cool.
And they had good, they had really good qualities to them. But there were moments as an actor that I was just like, I feel like shit about that. Or I got off the call and like, I just didn't feel, and I would think about like, why? Am I being heady? Like, is it me? Is it the way that am I just being insecure? Sometimes the answer is yes. But also, like, was it the way that it was brought up to me? Did I feel like I was being talked down to? Is this actually a partnership or I'm in service to this person? Like, those are things that I think that talent representation, management, agents, even casting directors should be mindful of. And I feel like those are issues that I think actors stumble on that a lot and fixate on that a lot. which is where they hate me. They wouldn't say a lot. It was just like, that tends to be a very common thing. And I feel like it's usually not intentional and ends up just getting in the way of the actual communication between the industry member and the actor that's supposed to happen anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in the beginning of a career, an actor feels like their agents, if they're lucky enough to get one, are like somewhat of a gatekeeper almost to them. And the relationship dynamic is very much like, my agent is kind of my boss almost, or like, but you don't like, it's like you employ them, but they all, like, it's this, it's meant to be this team. It's meant to be this like unit that collaborates with each other. And it really affected me when I first came out. I've been out here for 13 years. And I remember feeling like so nervous and timid about like, how do I even like not only approach them, but like even shape an email. I remember writing like 15-page emails.
This is heartbreaking to me.
It was crazy because I was just like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how, because you're like, you're so eager to work. You're so eager to do something. And you know that in a group of your best friends, you're fine. You're cool. You get along with people. But then when it comes to this and you care so much about it, you start to like flop sweat and you get nervous and you're just like, oh my God, I don't know how to be. And I want to make sure that my agent thinks I'm the coolest person in the room. And a lot of times you shoot yourself in the foot because you just don't act the way you are. And that's a shame, you know, because it's just like, just get it together and be a human with the person across from you, who's also just another human who has a 15-month-old baby who's changing diapers in the back and doing the same shit that any of us do, you know? So it's really hard to change that narrative of like, you're the gatekeeper, and like, unless you do something for me, I am incapable of doing something. And I just find that to be a really destructive place for actors to think and be. And I wonder if you run into that a lot with people.
Yeah. I mean, yes. I will,
yes.
I think that it takes all sides to have this industry work. And like, one thing I want to comment on very quickly is I may have said this already. The industry and the way that it is set up is broken. It is not. It does function, but it functions with a little bit. It is dysfunctional in the way that it functions.
Right.
In order for our industry to work, you need actors to show up and be prepared with all of the correct material and the correct place, with like, with the correct information based on what the producers have shared that they want to do, in the right building with the right material prepared, with everyone sitting behind the table that needs to sit behind there. That's how someone books a major job. And that takes more than one human or group of people to accomplish that. And so what I think is destructive is when people, like, I think what you mentioned, where you should, let's say that I sent you sides, Dylan. Let's say that I sent you being like, okay, you're going in for this thing tomorrow. Here's all the sides and everything. You went through that material and you had some questions. You should feel like you can just call me and ask me those questions, or email me, whatever, and be like, really quickly, I'm going through the sides and I was curious about A, B, and C. Is this the only key, right? It says to use this line instead of this line, but then in the, like, those things, they're put together in a way that there can be a lot of mistakes or a lot of things that are vague. You should know that you can call your team member and being like, can we get some clarification on this? And that person needs to be like, 100%, I'll be right there. That's not difficult to do. It is just as easy to be nice as it is to be a dick. And you can absolutely accomplish the same thing by being like, 100%, let me find out. Or maybe I've been asked that question by five other people and I already know the answer to it. Like,
yeah.
I just, it on the same right, like, let's switch to the other side. Casting directors, in my opinion, are the most underappreciated profession in our business. They are insane in what they accomplish. Yeah. And I am in awe of the work that they need to do, because they not only have to deal with us on our side, they also have to deal with the producers and the actors on the other side. You have the sellers, which are the agents who are like, consider seeing my people, please seeing my, like, I would love for you to see these people. These are all my ideas. You then have to book the room, deal all of the logistics of what that happens. And then the people who offer the job, the producers, are the one who's saying it needs to be this, 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 and this. And you need to find a way to say that is not awful, so that people know who to submit. And so like there are, the way that it works is I just don't envy what they do. And I think that they are underappreciated and underpaid. I will say that like until the end of time. And our relationship with them is really important for all of the reasons that we're just talking about. So like, let's say I'm able to, or you're like, you know what? I really think I'm more right for this role than I am for this one. Is it possible to be seen for that? I agree with you. I have a decent relationship with this casting director. I can call and find out if we can make that swap, or if we can't make that swap, I can give you a reason why. Being like, what you don't know is that role is already out on offer. I mean, it's all relationships. And I just feel like if people were able to communicate clearly with one another and with an element of conciseness and the ability of being kind, it would be a lot easier, and there would be a lot less heartache and frustration on all sides, in particular that of the actor.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I think you have I think your agencies and like your roster sound like they're small enough to where you can actually manage and mitigate your own clientele and do it the way that you prefer to do it. But let's talk about another actor who works for an agency with a 200 person roster. You know, somebody's over at CAA or whatever big agency, and each agent has over 100, you know, rather than 20, and they don't know how to handle all that stuff. And when you're somebody that's not, you know, a high earner, when you're a high earner on your roster, and somebody else is not, then how does that person that's not get any traction within that relationship? You know, you have a specific thing that caters to what you do, which is really awesome and generous and kind and working in the spirit of like collaboration. But I found in my own experience that that's not always the case. And it's just like, I'm just another cog in the wheel. Like, this is just like, where do I fit here? This, and then it just gets demoralizing even more because you don't know how to ask the right questions because you aren't getting the response and you're not having a real relationship.
If there is ever a time that you look at your phone when your agent is calling you and you say, fuck, that shouldn't be your agent. If you are nervous and you need, that person is on your team.
My face lights up.
Yeah.
I'm like,
shouldn't, that person is on your team. That's not even someone who is not affiliated with you. You are choosing to have that person affiliated with you. They need to be on board with what it is. They need to be excited about you. And like, listen, we have, our roster is small. It is not tiny. I wish that we only had like the breaking under 20. We have a good size roster, but we function in a way which is where the entire office works for everybody. And we regularly educate one another on who we represent.
But
I think a good example with a larger office like that, what are you able to do? What are you able to do that you are in control of, that you can take, that you have power, that empowers you to be able to do that? I mean, I think that offices work in a way which is where if it's a bottom line, meaning like they are concerned about money that you're bringing in and things like that, that's a specific energy. But I will say that if you are ever working with someone and you feel as though that person is not resonating with the way that you see yourself and how you want to fit in the world, the only thing worse than no agent is a bad agent. Mm-hmm. And that isn't to say that they're a bad person or a bad office. It's to say that they're not the right fit for you. That's all. I just think that it's important to think about.
Yeah,
I have like had the conversation with so many friends where they're not happy and they don't know what to do. And instead they're like more afraid of not having an agent than having a bad one. And it's like, you just need to, if you're not happy, you just need to end it and get a new one. But if this like relationship isn't working, you shouldn't be in the relationship. But they're so scared because then it's, well, then I'm going to have no agent and that's way worse. And it's like,
no, I'll have no auditions. I won't have the ability. All of a sudden I'm not. I mean, and like, listen, Adam, there's some truth. If you stop being submitted by that office for agent appointments, there would be a change. What I would argue is put your focus on finding someone on your team that belongs there. And I'm not saying it's easy. It's not. And I'm not saying that the industry is not saturated. It is. But if you believe that you belong in this industry and you fight and you focus, someone will see it and someone will work with you.
Yeah.
I think what's not talked about enough in these relationships are that they really need to be like almost finding a therapist, right? Not in the sense that they need to be a therapist, but like that relationship dynamic needs to be kind of similar. You need to be able to mesh with your person. And I think as like, as actors, when you're shopping for an agent, you're just stoked to get a response from any of them in the beginning, right? And you're just like, oh my God, I got an agent. Now I'm finally signed in New York City with a New York agent. Wow, this is amazing. I'm starting to go out stuff. I'm starting to book stuff. This is incredible. It doesn't matter how they make you feel or like if you're not happy with them. You're just like, and reality is that it's hard to get one. You know, I've been in and out of different relationships with agents throughout the time that I've been here. I'm sure you have too. And I'm sure you were too, Brett, when you were acting as well.
I was too. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and you.
That was the hardest part for me, was getting representation. It took years.
Yes. For sure.
Years.
And you know, every single next year, I have my trajectory has moved forward and I have grown as an actor and as the professional and just as a human being. And so I always think like, oh, well, that's going to be really easy this time around. I'm like, I'm totally viable now. And like, then I start trying and I start shopping for agents and I'm 5 days into it. And I'm like, I am such a fucking loser. Nobody cares about me still. How does this happen? Like, what the fuck is going on? Why am I in this place again? I'm right back to the drawing board. And, you know, I guess there's like a bunch of different variables at play that determine whether or not you can find the right person or this or that. But like, I really do think finding the right person as opposed to finding a person is really important. So for actors to just like seek as many people as they can, and then like choose from those hopeful meetings that they get if they're lucky enough to have those meetings and take them. Because it's not always that way. And you can get a vibe from somebody just like a person at a party. You're like, I don't like this guy's energy. Yeah. It sucks.
You literally just took the words out of my mouth. It is unique. Think about it like dating. That's what happens. And you can be in a relationship with someone for several years. And that was really, really beneficial for that time. And you have grown. And that person, if it's a mutual agreement to work together. And right. if at the end of a period of time, if you use contracts, or at the end of a big job, if you don't, you get to be the point of being like, this is working for me. This is not working for me. And you get to be able to dialogue about why that is or isn't happening. Just the same way, if you're dating or you're seeing someone, this is working for me. I want to keep it. Or you know what? I think this isn't the right fit. I need to go find someone else. That is accurate. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is a professional relationship, but you are absolutely right. Just the way that you would date, you will go in search of a lot of people that you could potentially have mutual interests with. And then sometimes you sit down and you're like, all right, this is just going to be a cocktail. I'm going to move on my way.
Right.
And then other times you can, you know, sit there and close the restaurant down. It all depends on to you know, nail that metaphor into the ground. It depends on how you are feeling about it and how mutual that attractiveness to one another, the ability to want to work together is.
Yeah.
And you guys at your agency, are you, do you kind of always have your eye on new clients? Is it only certain times of the year? Does it just sort of happen when it happens? How does that work for you guys?
So we're always looking. This is the thing. We're always seeing clients and shows. We're dealing with a lot of what. Also, is your puppy okay? Is everything okay? Okay. Just want to make sure it's okay.
In the hallway whining. I'm like, what are you doing? Ben, come here. Was that what you were hearing, Julian?
Yeah, I thought,
what the hell? I was like, is that my dog?
Too, so
I was just like, I hope he's okay. I don't want him to be hurt or something. So I'm like,
Benny, come here. Sorry.
That's okay. Remind me, what was the question?
Oh, looking for new talent.
Taking new people on.
Always. We are so actively, we're always seeing our clients in things, and then there'll be someone, because obviously we're there to celebrate our client and have that experience. But if you're watching your client who's a lead in a show and you see who is cast opposite them, or there's someone else in and you're just like, Who is that?
Yeah.
I'll then go home. I'll write a name, make a note. I'll then go home and I will absolutely look everything up I can on them. and then bring them into the office the next day and have a dialogue and see if anybody knows anything. Like, we do that a lot. I was at a Broadway opening a couple weeks ago. We had several people in the show. It was very exciting. It was a great party. I was obsessed with another person who was in the show, to the point that I leaned over to one of the partners of the company. I'm like, am I crazy that this person is incredible? And it got to be the point, which is where that is a regular occurrence.
How often are they not represented so that you actually have an opening?
I mean, I will only speak for myself. I am not necessarily the kind of person who poaches, which means I see someone who has representation and I go and I try to offer them better representation. That's just not my approach. That isn't to say that that is not a huge part of our business. It is. That is something that exists. It's just not
really
the human that I am. Yes. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, and like we were talking about how relationships can end, like you're in a relationship with a client. If a major office comes along and can make promises because of the nature of that office that our office cannot make, then your hands are tied. All I can do is the best that I can do and be the best that I am at my job. And that is all that we can do. And we want to continue to work and fight and thrive in our relationships. But if someone doesn't want to continue to work together at the end of that contract, we don't need to do that anymore. It's like, it's the nature of what it is. But it like to specifically, Adam, sometimes they are not. Sometimes you'll hear words or they're represented for a while. 6 months will go by and you will hear that they're looking. And that is when you're kind of like, oh, I remembered what this was. And then you can kind of investigate. That is the nature of it. Or the client that I'm in a show with is just like, I don't know if you are interested in this. Like, a lot of times there's a lot of very organic conversations that happens when people are not represented, interested in a very common thing is they're in LA or in Chicago and they're doing something in New York and they don't have representation in New York and they want to make that move. So there's a transitional period to be able to do something like that. There's all sorts of different options for something like that.
Yeah, that's cool.
So Brett, you used to be an actor.
I did.
You are originally from Michigan.
I am.
What was growing up there like? Were you like exposed to the arts? How did you gravitate towards acting in your younger years?
I mean, my mom took me to the touring shows when I was a kid. I saw Cats was my first show. Absolutely hated it. Hated everything about it. Wanted nothing to do with it. Then saw
no mom, no.
Do you remember in the there's that tennis shoe, that huge tennis shoe that falls? It's something that's iconic. I have a distinct memory.
I hate
was probably
that show.
Like 8 at the time.
Actually, I think I've only seen the movie, and I was like, this is awful.
Oh man. Well, you're not really missing a lot.
yeah, you're like, you should see it. Just, you know how bad it is.
There's this tennis shoe that like falls, and I remember my mom being like, "Well, that is entirely too big." And I'm like, what does that even mean? Why are we here? There's no point to this show. Like, that was kind of the idea. But she then brought me back. She was like, will you come and see another one? I'm like, okay. And that was Miss Saigon. And that was it. That was, for me, is someone to see a spectacle, to see like this insane level of like storytelling with this suspension of disbelief and this heightened reality was something that I was absolutely into. I then went that route. My family is a hockey family. I played that for a while. And then I realized that I was not as good as some of the people on my team. And I feel like you're going to notice that there's a theme in that, because I kind of was just like, okay. So I kind of went and started doing the fall musical, which I loved. Went to college for education, transferred, and then switched over for music theater to a different school. Graduated, moved out here, signed with an agent, started doing it. I kind of, as I was going through that process, realized that I wasn't happy and I didn't know why. And so I was working regionally and then I was-
Because you're an actor.
said it.
That's so fair. That's so, so fair of being like, but I mean, what is that saying? It's like if you want an actor to be unhappy, give them a job. If you want them to be miserable, put them in a hit. A thing that we've heard. Yeah.
I hate that. That's so depressing.
But I can't wait.
I know. Exciting. We signed up for this.
Yeah. Well, and also just to put a pin on that, that's what's wonderful about it. That is what is so beautiful, is it's a passion
totally.
Like that. And when you see the other side, when you do see someone like get to the rung, there's no better feeling than that. And there's no better feeling for them and for actors to be able to accomplish it, being like, I mean, there's moments, you guys have both worked, I'm positive, actors work to get that moment of the validation. You have validity being like, you know what? I'm not crazy. I just got this. It's this and this, and you'll try to explain it away, but I just accomplished this, and you have a moment of validation. And I think that that is a wonderful thing about our business.
It's a feeling that you can't describe to people, because as actors, especially, you know, if you're in LA and New York, most people are not from here. You came here from, I'm from Southern California. So mm-hmm. I came all the way out here to go to Circle in the Square. And then you come out here, and then it takes, everyone's different, obviously, it takes a while. So when you finally get your first TV booking, and you're like, holy shit, I came out here with a goal, and next week, I get to get paid really well, and I'm going to be on fucking TV. And I came out here, and I did that, and I hustled, and it's happening. Holy shit. It's all, you know, it makes it all worth it. And it's such an incredible feeling. And it, at least for me, like, it just doesn't go away. Every time I'm like, whoa.
Yes. I described it when I was on the show with you, Adam and Tommy, as being on the precipice of delusion. I like really think that way, because, you know, you get something right when you are ready to give up. And then that one thing validates you enough to keep going. And then as soon as that thing's over, it almost sets your bar a little bit higher with every single next thing you do. So then your expectations raise with that. And then you have to kind of like manage your expectations around all of that stuff. And that becomes harder for you. So like, it's almost like the higher you climb up this mountain, like the more weight you carry while you're going up, everything just becomes harder. And like even, you know, the waiting game, the patience game. And so it's, I really have felt like while I've been waiting, I'm like, shit, you know, you're always like, I should just quit. Maybe I should just give up and like stop this. And then something happens. And then you're just like, oh, great. I feel awesome. And it's over and you're right back to that place. And it really feels like you're just on the edge of delusion. Like you're on the precipice of delusion at all times. Like,
I love that.
I even feel validation from auditions. Because there'll be times you're like, God, it's been like a minute. And I'll think to myself, you know, maybe in the next few days, I email my manager and just sort of ask. And then it rains, it pours, and you're like, holy shit, these are all the shows that I've been wanting to go in for. And now I'm getting like bigger auditions. And it's, to me, even that is a validation of a casting director having seen my work for several years, whether they've cast me or not. And then giving you more trust by being like, well, here's a recurring, or here's a really big guest star. Here's a regular on a show, or even going into movies and being like, yeah, this role is opposite an Oscar winner. Adam's got it. It's fine.
Yeah.
Shit like that is even like, whoa, they're trusting you with that. And
willing the ability to let the job be the audition, not the actual shoot or not the actual time on the stage.
Totally.
An actor's job is auditioning. And so then I like, and listen, we don't necessarily have to go down the very dark path of what self-tapes are these days, because that is a change. When we're talking about theatrical world, that is hard to be like, so let me get this straight. You want me to stand in a room and be the director and actor and sound engineer and essentially the camera person of my own audition, which I will then go crazy on and do 45 times and then send it and upload it to this only to hear nothing ever again.
I love it.
Good.
I fucking prefer self-tape.
You fucking masochist.
And maybe it's because the director in me is like, I like having the control of what they see. And sometimes like back in the day, pre-COVID, you would get an insane amount of sides and they'll be like, see you at 11 tomorrow. And you're like, I have my night job. Like, when the fuck am I supposed to get 8 pages of a guest star down in less than 24 hours. Like, that's fucking crazy. And then you go in and you're just thinking about the words and you're nervous as shit. And then you kind of black out. And then they're like, thank you. And you're like, yeah. And you go down the elevator and you're like, I don't even know what just happened. I fully tunnel vision blacked out. I have no idea what I just fucking did. I probably looked crazy in there. Whereas this, I feel like with self-tapes, you get several days. So when I do it, it's just in my body more and I can just work on it longer. And also I can be like, yeah, that sucked. I want another one.
Like, so in the world of I can TV feel film, it. Yes. But I mean, what I'll ask you, are you okay with no response, with it being away from you and not necessarily hearing anything about it ever again?
I think that's just sort of normal.
Sure.
I mean, how many times going in person doesn't mean you're going to hear anything?
No, I'm about like the energy exchange when you're in there with the casting director.
Yeah,
you get that ability.
I mean, it's so like small talk. It's so short.
Adam, I love this. I love that you're. This is like my.
It's like it's not an interview. If it were an interview, that would be one thing. Like when I used to go to one-on-one, and you know, I would sign up for Brett's class for me to go read my scene, and then there's like a 5-minute interview after. Sure, that's one thing, but really they're just looking at, you know, this. I don't know, I don't think about that. Or but I also like going through my takes and being like, you know what, they didn't say anything, so fuck it, I'm gonna give them 2 or 3 takes that are all just a hair different. I think the one thing that I don't like about self-tapes is that I love going into offices where you do it and they're kind of like, look, we're going to do this 2 or 3 times. You show me what you prepared. After that, I'll give you some notes, but I at least want to just see what you brought in and what your interpretation of it is. And then we'll go from there. Whereas, you know, some they're like, great, bye. And you're like, I just, once we're done. Okay. You know, but then you like kind of work on it. Or sometimes they're like, so based on your reading, what you don't know is you're at blah, 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 blah. And you're like, oh, that wasn't in the breakdown. And that's not a clue in the sides. That wasn't an FYI in the sides. And it's nowhere in the pages you sent. How the fuck would I know that? Sure. And that's really important information that I wish I had. Now I have it, so I'll adjust the scene. But with self-tapes, there's none of that. And I mean, something that I booked once, it read a certain way. So when I went in, I said, hey, it says I don't see any of this. Like, you want me to play it like that? Like, I don't notice at the end. And she was like, no, you notice immediately. And I was like, that's not what the sides say. She goes, no, you do this. And I was like, if I hadn't asked, I wouldn't have known that. You know, so sometimes it's stuff like that. Like little notes in the room that I miss, sure. But I like picking myself and, you know, sending what I want them to see and being in. There's so much we don't have control over as actors in this. I can control that, and that I feel good about.
I mean, I think where I'm going to agree with you is what you just said right there.
Yeah.
So you have control of 20%. Of that entire process. 80% is completely away and has nothing to do with us. To be able to control the quality of thing that you are putting up there, the way that you're doing it, the takes that you want to put forward, that is absolutely accurate. Where I think it gets tricky is when, what I have noticed and what we deal with our clients, TV and film is one thing, because I think what you're describing is fairly accurate to how rooms work, meaning you don't always get a ton. Theater and music theater self-tapes is not fair. And it is set up in a way that is so...
I don't know how they do that with music involved. How do you do that?
You sing to a track in a room that is like, I mean, listen to how echoey this is. You're not set up for success. And so it's a tricky moment. I will say that it's starting to move back. We're getting to the place where they're walking its way, which is a wonderful thing for that kind of situation. But in the world of TV and film, I don't anticipate... I think that it will be self-tapes for the foreseeable future. And I think that that's okay, because I think it's one, it's the same art form. You're auditioning using the art form you're trying to book. And I think that makes sense.
And also, like, since self-tapes became kind of the industry norm post-pandemic, I don't know about you, Julian, I've never auditioned more in my life.
Sure.
It's crazy. And if that means more auditions equals self-tapes, then sure, count me in self-tape land. I'll do that all day.
Well, because it just means that they can give 200 auditions out to people because they are just receiving tapes rather than booking rooms in 10-15 minute slots. Yeah. Right. So they're seeing 10 times more people. I think I don't know. It's, I imagine that would be the most effective way to do this. And that sucks.
But have you noticed that you go out more since the pandemic with self-tapes?
Yeah. I mean, no, honestly, no, I haven't. Oh. It's probably about the same. But what I have noticed is that I pride myself in a different way on like the relationships that I build with these casting directors in the room when I get the moment with them. I had so many relationships that were being established over the last decade prior to the pandemic that I was just like, you know, going in and like clapping hands with casting directors and being like cool with them, not in any like, you know, ego actor type way, just like checking in, being like, what's up, keep coming back. You see somebody so often, you start to develop a relationship with them. I really miss that now because I like forget even who some of those people are now. And I guarantee you they've forgotten who I am. And so it's just like, shoot, that's what I get bummed about because like, although so many of my auditions were, you know, probably unprepared because of the circumstances of walking into the room in a 24-hour turnaround after bartending all night or something. You know, I still felt like even when my auditions were poor, I still felt like the energy that I was able to give just as who I am as a person was able to be transmitted. And that was always the most important thing to me. I was like, look, my talent is whatever it is. I'm always going to like be successful because of like my personality over my abilities. And maybe, you know, my abilities I can work on, but my personality and like who I am and what I represent, that's always going to like, for me, make me feel like that's where my point of pride comes from. And so, and that's removed now. And so I'm just like, and I typically do auditions by myself in this space. I use like Line Learner and I just talk to myself.
My gosh.
I pace it out properly. So it's all just like at the right speed and tempo. And if I need to change it, I adjust it. But it's like so manufactured and like, I don't know how to act like that. Like I'm not that kind of actor. And so it's just weird. And it always feels like it's falling flat because of those circumstances.
If I lived alone and I didn't have my boyfriend, I literally don't know what I would do.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's like something that I think is someone had said that I'm going to steal now and claim as my own was there was the good news about self-tapes in this industry is they can now open it up and see 300 people for a single role and have that opportunity. The bad news is they can see 300 people for a single role and have that opportunity. They probably watch seconds of each tape to be able to determine what they want, and then they file it to who they want to revisit and actually go through. I don't have anything to back that up. That is my guess.
It's based
on the quantity of it.
It's like the new headshot, that audition tape. Like they're looking at it and just like scrolling through them as they come. Nope, not the right look. Nope, the wrong hair color. Nope, eyes don't match. Nope, they're too short. Nope, even in the slate, I didn't like the way that they said their name. They tried to be too fucking expressive with it. Fuck that person. Nope, you know, like whatever that thing might be.
I certainly hope it is not like that. I really do.
It's like I think Steven Soderbergh said the exact same thing with like the new wave of, you know, having everyone has a camera in their pocket, because once upon a time cameras were very expensive, so there were only so many directors, and it was like, now it's incredible, anyone can make a movie. The problem is now everyone can make a movie, and there's so much out there that it's just a tsunami of content that is hard to like sift through, which is the exact same thing that you're saying. I don't know. It's like, I didn't like pre-pandemic, to be honest with you, because I was like, there would be 2 months with no audition, or if I had two in a month, I'd be like, woo, you know. And I don't remember really one office. I knew somebody that we had a really, really, really good rapport with, but it, you know, post pandemic, it was like three auditions a week constantly. And it was like, holy shit, I've never acted this much ever. You know, it was crazy. And then it was the same offices that are a really big deal that you're like, they keep calling me in. This is great. This is progress that I never felt beforehand. You know, so
I think that there is also a change with our office. We had noticed there were some people who would walk in for guest stars, you know, top of shows, series regulars, book. Anytime it was, they just knew it. And then when the tech aspect needed to come into play, meaning they needed to do what we're talking about, which is essentially make a self tape and be a part of all those issues, absolutely fell apart.
Hmm.
That's the idea, is like some people's brains don't work like that. Some actors' brains are not geared in a way of like, my entire job is getting the eye away from me, not looking at myself like that. And now that's exactly what I'm doing. So like, that's what one of our actors shared with me. And I completely sympathize with that, because I'm like, I understand all of your training is not to watch yourself perform. And now that is the exact thing you are doing with these auditions.
Yeah. 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 And I'm sure for a certain generation, you know, all of that comes into play and they're like, please, anything but this.
Sure, truly.
I just want to go in and do the lines. I don't want to fucking set up a light.
Oh man,
they'll call and you'll be like, oh, you'll be like, okay, what's happening? Hit enter. Okay, that's
oh,
safe.
No.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's.
But you do that. You do that for them.
Yeah. Oh,
do you think that? Do you think that an agent's relationships to patients needs to be kind of the same as an actor's? Like, do you feel like you have a good relationship to patients with yourself? And as an agent, is that important to have? Obviously, you have more opportunities to get successful through because you have more people associated to your career. But do you think that that's like a thing that you need to focus on a lot as an agent?
Yeah, I will say that I have imposter syndrome. I think most people do to a certain extent. Which is where you're like, how am I here? I wake up every day. I try my best to be the best human that I can and do my job to the best of my ability. And there are days that I feel amazing about what was accomplished and the relationships and in the conversation we've had. And I learned something about a client. And then there are days where I feel like nothing can go right. And I'm worried that I don't, I'm worried, like, am I, should I be doing this? Should I quit? Like, there are
precipice of delusion.
Yeah. Like, but I will also say that I truly believe that when you have a lot of people that have imposter syndrome are actually that weird just position with what it is makes them so good at what they do. It empowers them in a way of being like, they need to make sure they know what they're talking about, because they're constantly living in this world of like, I just have to make sure I'm doing the best that I can, because I don't want them to figure out that I'm still learning along the way. And in actuality, everyone is learning. Every day is a new experience. Nice. So, I mean, to answer your question, yes, that is an aspect of it. I think that actors are trying to advance in their careers. Agents are trying to advance in theirs. Casting directors are trying. Everyone is trying to do what they can do. So the industry as a whole and their colleagues and people in there view them in a way of being like, this person knows what they're doing. They're doing great work. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the best way to do that and what I try to live by, and I have good days and bad, is leading with integrity. And at the end of the day, what I will not do is lie. And I will not necessarily, I will never belittle someone. I would never push others down to get myself up. And I feel like those are kind of the rules of thumb I live by just in my life. And it's kind of manifested itself in the way that I agent as well.
Hmm. Yeah, good on you, man. That's awesome.
I said good days and bad days. I did mention that, right? Just to say that again.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it goes without saying regardless. you know, anybody in this business is going to have that. I think it's safe to assume that as an agent, you're going to have some pretty gnarly days, especially now going through what's going on. And I think a lot of, you know, even actors are definitely spotlit all the time, and especially now in the strike and stuff. But I think it's smart to consider the agents as well and what they're going through and their family lives and, you know, what's really happening behind closed doors that that nobody else is really talking about. I guess this is my appreciation moment to you for doing what you do, and just kind of like applauding your integrity and your work ethic and like your drive and your willingness to just be a human being in a very non-human business sometimes.
Sometimes, I mean, you're right. And what I mean, for thank you, man. I really appreciate that, man. Thank you. It's something, there are such beautiful moments in this business, and there are incredible people. I wouldn't do it if I didn't have like other colleagues that are similar to me or that inspire me or that have taught me things. And that goes from the founders of my company. That goes from like colleagues that I'm agents with, my fellow casting directors. There is always humanity when you go in search of it. And you just, there are days that are dark and there are days that you need to go for you need to try to find the light and what those are. And I feel like all you can do in those is gravitate toward those who you think similarly to and who inspire you and who aren't necessarily, I mean, for lack of a better expression, part of the problem. Like who are out there trying to make, like where it's, what is happening right now is dark, but there is beautifully inspiring things that are happening. Like if you look on social media, you are seeing what people are doing for one another, with one another, and that's beautiful.
Oh man, I was down at the picket lines last week and it was just like one of the more inspiring things I've been around in years. I was so moved. It was so, so cool to be in that energy. Truly, it was really, really special.
And a studio in LA just cut down all the trees so that protesters don't have, or picketers don't have shade. Fuck them. So crazy.
Really?
Yes.
What? It's just a double whammy.
Yep. Like, there was a block that had all these trees that during the day was providing shade for everyone picketing. And over the weekend, they had them all trimmed and cut completely. And they didn't have a permit for it, apparently, is what some people looked into it. They just assholishly did it to now not provide shade nice for people work, in LA guys. Who are picketing.
This is a prime example. We could have taken the money. That was probably hundreds or thousands of dollars to do. There's some money. I just found you a couple thousand dollars.
Yeah.
Like we're already on our way.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
so
unfortunate.
So frustrating.
But Brett, I bet one of the most beautiful parts of your job is sharing in those victories, because not only do obviously the actors bring forward, you know, the talent that gets them ultimately hired, but you shepherd those relationships and make all of it sort of happen. So I'm sure, you know, even though for us actors, there's things that when you get it, you know, depending on what the show is or the director or whatever, it's a huge victory. And we're like, oh my God. But I'm sure the same goes for you where you're like, I was so fucking hoping that this person would get this thing and they did. And I, you know, you're such a huge part of that.
I mean, thank you. What we talked about before, which is like the system is clunky and broken. But all of those aspects, when they work, and that means somebody puts out a breakdown, casting makes the recasting release. I look at it, I read the ideas, I put people through, I push my ideas, casting agrees with me, picks it up, the actor goes in there, does amazing work, makes it through the process. The team sees that great work. You then get the offer. You negotiate the offer, and then you get the ability. Like there is something about that is daunting. But when it happens and you finish, like I also never. I'm very superstitious about those things, and I wait until it is done. Meaning, like you officially say we're good to close, we're set, and then I will have like a private celebration to myself. Or I'll say something to my wife.
And then you wait then you wait 6 months to see if they actually made it to air.
That's true. Yeah. That's very, very true. But I mean, you do, you get the ability of like, you, I love the idea, and this is just me as a human. One of the reasons I think that I was a B plus actor, and I'm proud of that. I wear it with a badge of honor. I was fine in what it was that I did and how I did. I was satisfactory, but I'm not interested in being at the forefront of the experience of the industry. It's just not for me. Like I'm more of a private person. I love the idea of doing my job so well that you don't know that I exist. The client does. The client is the person at the peak of this pyramid, so to speak, and we are just behind them to make sure that what they are doing, how it is going, looks effortless for them. Because it's not. It takes an entire team to accomplish all of those things. But you see it when you find, and all of a sudden, you're watching somebody who is on a series or on a movie or even in a Broadway play or musical, and they are everywhere. And it looks like they're showing up and they're beautiful and they're walking in and they're this wonderful, eloquent human being. That is a whole team that is behind that person making that happen. And I love those moments when we get to be a part of it. And then you finish it and you're like, that was it. That was why I do it.
Yeah. Like, people I think working that that's together a good to, example. People working together for a common goal that ultimately creates something that feels and looks like magic.
Yeah, that's exactly, Dick. It looks, it's the idea of like the effortlessness when, because true people, actors, industry members are like, that was a lot. That was a very hard thing that just that was just accomplished. And I feel like that's what's wonderful is being there and having your colleagues be like, nice work. Good job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Brett Rigby. Real quick. We always ask this at the end of episodes that let's just pretend the strike is not a thing right now. And we're under like normal times. What would you say to, what advice would you give actors who are either kind of just coming out of school and into the real world of like making this a profession and trying to, you know, go from crawling to walking, or to actors who are feeling sort of stuck and don't really know what to do? What advice would you give to those people?
That's a great question. Run your own race. I think that no matter what we do in this industry, actors compare themselves to one another. And that is an impossible hill to climb. Everyone's trajectory is unique to themselves. So as you're going through this, you will be more successful than others at this time. And then in a year, that person will have this opportunity and have, but like you have to realize that you are in an agreement with yourself and your team. Run your own race. Realize that when you compare yourself to others, you will always fall short. A really famous saying that I think is appropriate. This is a marathon. It is not a sprint.
So, that is the name of our very first episode.
See, but I mean, I do. It's one of those, but it's a perfect example of the idea of like, you have to pace yourself. There will be, using that meta, there will be miles that are slower. There will be miles that are much faster. And at the end of the day, it's about the entity as the whole and you as an actor. I would say that it is very, very important to run your own race. And that kind of goes in tandem with that. Surround yourself with those who love you and have a passion that is unrelated to this industry. Surround yourself with those who love you, because if you only surround yourself with the industry, it will be a volatile, sad situation for you. You need people who love you for the human that you are. And so that you have a place to retreat when the industry is not a good place. And everyone should have that. I think everyone's mental health will be better. The same thing is if there is something else you love to do in addition to being in this industry, I think that that is also a great idea. Allow yourself, for a prime example, when I was an actor, I don't know how this happened. I became obsessed with vintage gaming systems. And by obsessed, I mean, I would go to special auctions. I would talk. There was a whole.
I had literally no idea what you were going to say.
Isn't that crazy?
And that was not what I was. I was like, vintage. So oh.
home gaming consoles. And it was like a moment, which is where I would at night I would have a bad audition or something, and I would come home and I would pay the Atari 2600, or I would go into like 8-bit Nintendo, or I would do some, I would just give myself a breather that allowed me to get to invest in something that was not our industry. And it just made me a happier human, which I think is ultimately which makes you a better actor.
Very well said. Do you have any actors who have anything exciting coming up?
I do.
On your roster, I mean?
Sure. I would say we have some great people in Broadway shows. I'm trying to think of some fun. We currently have we have the cover of a Juliet in Anne Juliet, and she is on for the next 2 weeks, and she is sensational. Sweet. I love her. We have a couple of things that are about to be announced for a few Broadway plays and another Broadway musical, which are very, very exciting as well. I encourage everyone to see Back to the Future. I would like to tell everyone that the end of that musical is magic. And I think that is an enjoyable night at the theater.
Have they started previews yet?
Mm-hmm. There are previews, yeah.
Oh, okay. Cool. I thought so. Yeah. Nice.
So, I mean, what I will say, and this is actually something that someone said, which is all of our clients that we have, we are thrilled that are working on Broadway stages and otherwise. But if you have the ability to support theater right now, I think that is super important. And particularly with what's going around, invest, especially if we're talking about downtown stuff. If you have the ability, or if there's something fun or something interesting, I think that that's such a great place to go and get inspired, and such a great way to invest in the infrastructure of something that really needs help.
Mm-hmm. Go see Titanic.
Oh, it's so good.
I just saw it for the third time this week.
Oh my God.
Really?
It's what dreams are made of. That is a prime example of something being so brilliant that you're like, it is exactly what this city needs. It is exactly what this city needs.
There's like this weird, wicked Before the Break podcast Titanic pipeline that we have. We like have so many fucking people from Wicked who have been on our show who are now going into Titanic. And
oh my God, I love it. Well, I mean, you need to be able to sing like from one show to be able to sing in the other show. So that actually makes sense to me.
Yeah.
The talent in that show is off the fucking charts.
It's a great show.
I just saw Lindsay Heather Pierce as Rose the other day. She was a guest on the show, and geez Louise, unbelievable. And Jackie Burns just joined as who was our first guest ever on this show, and she just came on as Celine this week. Crazy. But go see Titanic. It's fucking brilliant.
Yeah, that's a fantastic show.
Brett, thank you so much. Where can people find you online?
I have an Instagram. It's my name. Please find me. Come say hello. It's open to everyone. Beyond that, my gosh, I don't even think I have a website anymore. If you guys are interested in reaching out as far as submitting for being our office, submissions@cgftalent.com. That is something that we look at and view regularly. I hope, and I will most likely see all of you out and about while we watch theater and everything and navigate through what's happening right now.
Awesome. I'm curious really quick. How many emails seeking like representation do you get daily?
A lot.
Like, actually, how many though?
I would say realistically, we probably get about anywhere between 75 to 150 submissions a day. But there are then days where it's less, right? Because also there's like kind of a wave of them. Someone will get out of a class, and then there'll be like okay, it will be one of those moments that happen. I mean, what I will tell you in the way that we function is that email address is something that actually goes to every one of our desks.
Okay.
And then we will go through it when we've got time, and you kind of look for specific things. My two cents on people submitting digitally, conciseness is key. Have something in the actual email for me to listen to you or see your work, whether that's a reel, whether that's a self tape, whether that's a clip of you singing, whatever that is, so that I can get a good sense. And then if there is interest from that point, I flag it and then revisit when we have the ability to kind of like dive in a bit more on it.
Yeah. Don't be like 2012 Julian who sent 15-page emails talking about my sister's.
Did you guys get this dossier from Julian? It's a whole dossier.
It's gonna be like, I'm halfway through. I needed to take a lunch break. I'll get.
I went back and saw some recently, and I was just like, "Who in the fuck?"
Oh, that's why I wasn't getting signed.
I'm the worst. I'm such a dipshit. Gotta work harder than smart sometimes, you know.
Did one person reach out? Did you get a single person who was just like, thank you for the thoughtful email?
Honestly, I lied my way in when I first got into with an agency. I just told them that I was being referred by a client of theirs that I wasn't actually being referred by. And I know I'm saying this on air at this point, but like it was what I did. And then by the time that I actually went into the office, because they took a meeting. They asked me, they said like, hey, so what's up with like your relationship with this person? And I had this whole backstory mapped out. I had like found the person on Facebook. I told them about it. She'd been like, hey, you can be my friend, whatever. But in the moment they were like, so what's up with this person? And I just told them the truth. I was just like, honestly, like I lied. I didn't know that person at all. Like it just came out of me like in this moment. And there's like five people like sitting around me. My first agency meeting I'd ever been in New York in my life. I was just flops and I was about to shit my pants. And they were just like, they all kind of like looked at each other. And then they were like, well, I guess you're in here now. So
we have your zip drive with all the materials.
Yeah, like we liked what you sent to us. And so, and you're here,
oh
I guess
God.
Like maybe Ooh, don't
that's a
do
gamble.
That.
Maybe don't
maybe
lie.
Don't do that. But like, you're here, so let's chat. And yeah, I think I like threw a couple like quick punchlines that like made them laugh, and they were like, "All right, cool, you're fine.
Good.
You're not gonna kill us or something. Like you're good." And
oh
yeah, so
God, honestly, dude, I thought that story was gonna go another way. I really did.
Yeah, no, it was like it was, but that took about 2.5 years of doing like daily. Yeah, that's why I was asking like how many people. This was again like you know over a decade ago. And I would just be every day. I remember dating a girl and she was just like, dude, are we in a relationship or are you just trying to like send like agency submissions all day, every day? And I was like, yes. It was like,
oh my God.
It was insane. I went insane. I had like forgotten how to be a person because I was so interested in being an actor. And ironically, like to be an actor, you got to be a person, you know?
That is the first thing industry looks for. Like just to put a pin on that. That is the absolute first thing I look for when I'm sitting down with someone. I want to talk to a human as opposed to someone who's trying to tell me what I want to hear for the whole meeting.
Yeah. Got to learn from your mistakes.
Brett Rigby, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for taking the time out to chat with us. This was awesome.
Oh my God. My pleasure, guys. This was great. I had a really, really good time.
Good.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Super cool to talk to you.
Thank you, Brett.
Take care, friends.
Pleasure to meet you, man. Hope to see you in person someday.
Definitely.
Take care, man. I want to be friends with him.
He just seems like such a lovely person.
I'd be friends with him. I'd hang out. I'd have some Long Island iced teas with him.
Yeah. That was great. There was a lot of like really, I feel, because we've had a few agents on the show and I feel like that interview, there was some stuff that like we hadn't touched on before that I was like, oh, that's, and maybe it's because of, you know, everything that's going on right now, or, you know, I don't know, with COVID stuff, it's just been so crazy. But there was a lot in there that I was like, oh, that feels like the first time we've kind of
touched on that. I've listened to a lot of these podcasts with agents on them, not necessarily all of your guys's, but like other podcasts that I'm trying to get insight from. And there's a lot of the same questions. And this one felt a lot more just rooted in like being homies. And like talking, and there was also, I hope the listener gets a lot of insight from what he had to offer, because kind of like it wasn't all the same. Like, so what would you suggest an actor do when they're submitting to you? How do you go about, like, you know, it wasn't like that. I think sometimes that comes from us having interest in that regard, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it was just a really kind of like lovely conversation where he was just like, and I think he felt like his guard could be down and just hang and chat. It was great. And I hope that again, there's a lot of insight there for people who are listening.
Yep. Same. Great episode. All righty. Cool. As always, you can find out more about Before the Break and how to become a working actor at workingactorpro.com. Follow us on Instagram at Before the Break Pod and Working Actor Pro. Follow us on Twitter at Before the Break Pod. Follow us on TikTok at Before the Break Pod. Check out my stuff at AdamDiCarlo.com and follow me at ThatAdamDiCarlo. You can check out Tom's stuff at TheTomDowning.com and follow him at I'm Tom, by the way. You can follow Julian at Julian Gavilanes. Don't forget to hit subscribe, leave a rating, and write a review if you like what you hear. Check back next week for an all-new episode with an all-new guest. See ya.
Later, guys.
You've been listening to Before the Break. The hosts are Tommy Beardmore and Adam DiCarlo. Cover art by Amanda June Boucher. Music by Benjamin Sturley. Before the Break is recorded live from Los Angeles and New York City.